You just pick up a portable charger, you plug in your phone,
The
and
little battery icon turns green.
right, the little icon turns green, and the entire process is just totally invisible. Like, we treat these devices like they're just, I don't know, inert blocks of plastic.
Yeah, completely harmless.
Exactly. We just completely ignore the raw chemistry and the physics that we're literally carrying around in our pockets. Up until, of course, that physics decides to, violently remind us that it's there.
I mean, it is the absolute definition of taking stability for granted.
Oh,
We
total.
just expect these volatile chemical reactions to perform flawlessly while being, bounced around in backpacks and subjected to extreme heat. It's wild.
It really is. And well, if you are the learner joining us today, our mission is simple. We're here to cut through the massive influx of tech noise and extract the most vital insights from today's Techin morning briefing. And today is April 19, 2026.
We got a lot to cover.
We really do. We're tracking a very clear narrative through today's intel. There are about six major stories on our desk, and we are looking at the absolute limits of technology. So, spanning from the physical constraints of, batteries catching fire in our pockets, all the way to the geopolitical wars over the silicon that's powering the entire global AI infrastructure.
Right. And what's so interesting is that everything we are examining today fundamentally revolves around what happens when companies push right up against those boundaries. Sometimes those boundaries are physical, like with the batteries, and sometimes they're regulatory. But the friction always happens when ambition just outpaces reality.
Okay, let's unpack this because we really need to start with the most urgent news on our desk today.
The safety alerts.
Right, the physical safety of everyday tech. So, the Consumer Product Safety Commission has just announced the second major recall of the Caseleaf 5000 milliamp hour MagSafe wireless power banks.
Which is just a huge deal.
It's massive. The sheer scale is staggering, honestly. 430,000 units are being pulled. And the statistics from the CTSC report are just tragic.
Yeah, they really are.
We're looking at over 79 incident reports. There are at least seven serious burns, ranging from first to third degree, and one confirmed fatality.
Yeah, the case in New Jersey.
Right. A 75-year-old woman in New Jersey died from complications after one of these banks exploded in August of 2024. Like, we treat these power banks like they're just harmless little juice boxes for our phones.
Juice boxes, yeah.
But essentially, if they're improperly manufactured, they're basically carrying highly reactive chemical firebombs in our pockets.
Well, when you look at the engineering of these specific power banks, the failure points become just glaringly obvious.
Oh, so, like, what's
Well,
actually failing?
so a 5,000 milliamp hour lithium ion battery relies on this highly delicate, volatile liquid electrolyte to shuttle energy back and forth and to make these devices slim and pocketable because everyone wants a thin phone and a thin charger.
Right, of course.
Manufacturers use these incredibly thin, microscopic plastic separators between the anode and cathode.
Ah, and then they pair it with MagSafe wireless charging, which, from what I understand, generates a massive amount of excess heat just through the simple inefficiency of wireless power transfer.
Exactly. That heat is the catalyst. If a manufacturer cuts corners on thermal management just to maintain a sleek aesthetic, well, that excess wireless charging heat causes that liquid electrolyte to vaporize and expand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it melts that microscopic plastic separator. The moment the anode and cathode touch, the chemicals mix instantly.
Which causes what
It
exactly?
triggers thermal runaway. Basically, the battery feeds on its own heat until it violently combusts.
Jeez. I mean, I understand the physics of the failure, but I really have to push back on the timeline here.
The double recall.
Yes. Why on earth did it take two recalls and a mid-air explosion to get 430,000 of these off the market? Like, the first recall was issued back in April 2025 after 51 reports of overheating. Yet the data shows 28 more incidents happened after that first recall, including a 47-year-old woman whose power bank exploded on a commercial airplane just a few months ago in February 2026.
Which was terrifying.
It's insane. And that is the specific incident that forced airlines to finally enact stricter battery regulations. So, why didn't that first recall solve the problem?
What's fascinating here is the dangerous disconnect between a regulatory mandate and consumer reality.
What do you mean?
Well, a government recall does not magically vaporize the dangerous product from your living room. People skim past the warning emails, or maybe they bought the device secondhand and never registered it.
Right, or they just think it won't happen to them.
Exactly. They fall victim to normalcy bias. They assume that because their specific unit hasn't caught fire yet, it must be totally safe.
It's literally a localized game of roulette in your pocket.
It really is, which is why we're directly urging you, the listener, to physically check your bags today. Like, right now.
Seriously, check your bags.
If you own a Casely 5000 milliamp hour MagSafe power bank, stop using it immediately. Visit the CPSC website, verify your serial number, and get it out of your home. This is the ultimate cost of prioritizing a slim form factor over robust thermal engineering.
Absolutely. And, you know, that physical limitation of how long a battery can safely operate, it brings us directly to the opposite end of the spectrum.
Hardware designed to outlast us.
Exactly. Hardware that is actively being engineered to outlast our expectations, reshaping how long we keep our devices. So Samsung just dropped two new mid-range phones on April 10th. The Galaxy A57 5G for $550 and the Galaxy A37 5G for $450.
Really solid price point.
Very solid. And they both ship with Samsung's awesome intelligence AI features. But the actual shockwave here is the software promise.
The update cycle.
Yeah. Samsung is committing to six major OS updates. They're promising to support a $450 phone until the year 2032.
Which is unprecedented for that tier. I mean, historically, the mid-range market was essentially a disposable tab.
Oh, totally.
You would be lucky to get 2 years of security updates, let alone 6 years of major operating system overhauls.
So what does this all mean for the consumer? Let's be realistic here. The physical battery inside that A37 is going to chemically degrade to a fraction of its capacity long before 2032.
Oh, without a doubt.
The charging port will wear out. The screen might get scratched. Do people actually want to hold on to a budget phone for 6 years? Or is Samsung just throwing out an impossibly long timeline as a marketing gimmick?
Well, the physical battery will absolutely require a replacement to reach 2032.
Yeah.
But the strategy goes much deeper than just a marketing stunt.
Okay, how so?
The smartphone hardware market has effectively plateaued. We aren't seeing massive revolutionary leaps in how a standard glass rectangle functions year over year.
It's true. A phone is a phone at this point.
Exactly. And Samsung knows this. By democratizing their flagship longevity and bringing it down to the $450 price point, they're executing a massive defensive play.
Ah, locking them in.
Yes. If they can convince you that your affordable phone will remain secure and fully capable of running whatever apps exist in 2030, they lock you into their ecosystem. You won't even look at an Apple device for half a decade.
I see. So they're essentially trading short-term hardware upgrade cycles for long-term ecosystem loyalty.
Precisely.
But while Samsung is playing a defensive software game, Huawei is taking a radically different approach.
It'd be different.
They are attacking the physical shape of the phone itself. Our sources show Huawei's massive April 20 launch in China for the Pura X Max.
The world's first book-style, wide-format, foldable.
Yeah. And the specs are aggressive. It runs on their proprietary Kirin 9030 chip, packs up to 16 gigabytes of RAM, a terabyte of storage, and comes in five different colors.
But the wide format is what really stands out.
It is, because traditional foldables have always seemed fundamentally flawed to me. You unfold them, and you just get a giant square.
Right, the one-to-one aspect ratio problem.
It's just so awkward.
It is. Traditional foldables open into a nearly perfect square, which sounds great until you actually try to use it for modern media.
Right, because nothing is shot in a square.
Exactly. If you watch a 16:9 widescreen video on a square screen, you get massive black bars on the top and bottom. The actual video ends up being smaller than it would be on a standard non-folding phone.
Which entirely defeats the purpose of having a giant screen.
It completely defeats it. Furthermore, split-screen multitasking on a square forces two tall, incredibly narrow app windows that are almost unusable.
Right. So by physically widening the entire chassis, Huawei is basically turning the device into a true landscape tablet when it's unfolded.
They are solving the ergonomic friction that has held foldables back all these years. And even though Huawei is currently restricted to the Chinese market due to, you know, ongoing trade embargoes.
Right, the geopolitical side of things.
Yeah. But their design choices dictate the global supply chain. When a player that massive pivots to a wide format standard, display manufacturers adjust their tooling.
Ah, so everyone else has to adapt.
Exactly. Apple and Samsung will inevitably have to respond to this physical paradigm shift. They can't ignore it.
But, you know, engineering a screen that lasts until 2032 or inventing a wider folding display is ultimately kind of pointless if the manufacturer doesn't control the intelligence running behind the glass.
Which is the real battle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the vicious, high-stakes battleground for control over the apps we actually use every day. Because ecosystem loyalty isn't just hardware anymore. AI is the new battleground.
The software gatekeepers are currently fighting an absolute existential war over artificial intelligence deployment.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The European Commission had just handed down a landmark antitrust decision.
Huge news.
They ordered Meta to restore free WhatsApp access to rival AI chatbots. And we have to look at the timeline to understand just how bold Meta's play was here.
It was incredibly aggressive.
Right. Back in October 2025, Meta outright banned AI rivals from the WhatsApp business solution. So if your company's primary product was AI, meaning OpenAI's ChatGPT, Microsoft's Copilot, Anthropic's Claude,
you were just gone.
Yeah, you were kicked off the platform entirely.
And you have to consider what WhatsApp is globally. It isn't just a messaging app. In many parts of the world, it is the primary operating system for commerce.
Right, it's everything.
It's how people book flights, order food, and handle all their customer service. Being kicked off WhatsApp is a death sentence for a consumer-facing bot.
Exactly. So, feeling the immense regulatory heat from kicking out all their rivals, Meta offered a so-called compromise in March 2026.
A very strategic compromise.
Oh, very. They allowed the AI companies back in, but they introduced a targeted per-message fee specifically for them.
Right.
Then the EU stepped in this April and struck the pricing model down, correctly labeling it a de facto ban.
Because it was.
I mean, think about it like this. It's as if Meta owns the only major toll road into a city. And suddenly, they're charging a massive premium only to the delivery trucks of their direct competitors.
That's a great way to put it.
Like, imagine a universal translator earpiece that everyone uses. Then the manufacturer updates the software, so if you try to use an outside translation algorithm, they charge you a dollar for every single word. It makes it mathematically impossible for any competing service to exist. How did Meta think they could implement a targeted API tax and not get slammed for anti-competitive behavior?
Well, they almost certainly knew the EU would strike it down eventually.
Really? Then why do it?
Because in the tech sector, tying a competitor up in court for 6 months while you capture market share is just a standard operating expense.
Wow. Just the cost of doing business.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the EU ruling sets a monumental global precedent. Meta's overarching objective was to ensure their proprietary AI was the exclusive intelligent layer on WhatsApp.
Because if you control the AI that the user interacts with, you control the data pipeline.
Absolutely. Think about how you use a digital assistant. If you ask a WhatsApp bot to find you a hotel, the entity providing that AI gets to decide which hotels you see. They decide how the prices are sorted and what behavioral data is extracted from your request.
That's a scary amount of power over everyday decisions.
It is. If Meta had successfully defended this per-message fee, big tech platforms with massive user bases could have easily choked out all independent AI developers by just weaponizing their API pricing.
So the EU stepping in ensures that you, the consumer, actually get a choice of which intelligence you invite into your daily conversations.
Yes, it protects your agency.
But to process those conversations, to run the language models translating your requests, and to power the awesome intelligence on that Samsung phone for the next 6 years, that requires computing power that is difficult to even comprehend.
It's on a scale we've never seen.
Right. The war behind the software war is happening deep in the server rooms.
The foundational infrastructure layer.
Yeah. None of the bots fighting for space on your WhatsApp can even function without the silicon dictating the pace of innovation. And our sources outline an absolute clash of the titans playing out right now in the hardware space.
It's a fascinating race.
On one side, we have Cerebra Systems. They are targeting a mid-May 2026 IPO under the ticker CBRS, and they're looking to raise $2 billion at a massive $23 billion valuation.
A huge valuation.
Huge! They boast 76% revenue growth, an exclusive $10 billion contract with OpenAI, and a massive deployment partnership with Amazon Web Services.
And we should note, they've been trying to do this for a while.
Yes. It is worth noting they originally tried to IPO in 2024, but were blocked by CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, over national security concerns regarding their Abu Dhabi-based investor, G42.
Right. But they have since cleared that geopolitical hurdle.
They have. But the geopolitical scrutiny makes total sense when you understand what Cerebra is actually building.
Oh, their engineering is completely revolutionary. They have completely re-engineered the physical architecture of a microchip to solve the single biggest choke point in artificial intelligence.
Which is?
The interconnect bottleneck.
Okay, let's break down that bottleneck. Traditionally, making computer chips is basically like taking a massive pizza, a massive silicon wafer, and slicing it up into dozens of tiny individual slices or processors.
Right.
But when those tiny processors need to work together to train a massive AI model, they have to send data off one chip across the motherboard and into another chip.
Which takes time.
Exactly. Even traveling at the speed of light, that physical distance introduces microscopic delays. Cerebras looked at that process and basically said, what if we just don't slice the pizza?
I love that analogy.
Thanks. They're taking a massive 12-inch disk of silicon and using the entire unbroken thing as a single continuous chip.
It's an elegant brute force solution to physics. By keeping all the memory and computing cores on a single, uninterrupted piece of silicon, data never has to take the slow road across a motherboard.
So no bottleneck at all.
Practically none. The AI models can be trained incredibly fast because the communication delay between cores is virtually eliminated.
That's incredible. But NVIDIA, the reigning king of AI hardware, isn't just going to hand over their crown.
Not a chance.
No. In direct retaliation, at the GTC 2026 conference, NVIDIA unveiled the Vera Rubin VR200 GPU.
The specs on that are just monstrous.
They really are. Instead of changing the fundamental shape of the chip like Cerebras, NVIDIA is just brute-forcing the speed and efficiency of traditional architecture, and the technical leads here are actually terrifying.
Yeah, we heard.
The VR200 features 288 gigabytes of HBM4 memory paired with an 88-core Vera CPU.
Okay, we definitely need to unpack HBM4, or High Bandwidth Memory Generation 4.
Let's do it.
Imagine a city where everyone has to commute from the suburbs to the downtown office buildings.
That sounds awful.
Right, that commute takes time. HBM4 solves this by building a skyscraper of memory directly on top of the computing logic.
Oh, wow.
So the data just takes a hyperfast elevator straight down into the processor. There's no commute.
That is brilliant. And the processor waiting at the bottom of that elevator is capable of 50 petaflop PS of FP4 compute power.
Which is just a dizzying number.
It is. That is a 233% jump in raw computational throughput over their previous generation, the Blackwell B300, in a single generation. But let's ground that jargon.
Please do.
When we talk about FP4, or 4-bit floating point precision, we are talking about how the AI calculates. AI doesn't need to calculate an equation to 20 decimal points of perfect accuracy.
Right. It's not launching a rocket.
Exactly. It needs to make billions of good enough statistical guesses instantly. So FP4 sacrifices extreme, unnecessary mathematical precision for unbelievable blinding speed.
Speed is everything for AI.
And 50 petaflop PS means this single chip is performing 50 quadrillion operations every single second. Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, is officially calling this the era of agentic AI and describing it as the biggest infrastructure build in history.
This raises an important question, though. How does a disruptor like Cerebras actually survive against that kind of entrenched monopoly?
I mean, that's a billion-dollar question,
yeah.
Literally.
Cerebras is making incredibly bold, structurally innovative moves. I mean, their $23 billion valuation and their massive OpenAI contract are undeniable signals of industry confidence.
For sure.
However, Cerebras is still burning cash to scale their revolutionary wafer size technology. They are not profitable yet.
While NVIDIA is practically printing money.
Exactly. NVIDIA is not only immensely profitable, but they are already shipping Vera Rubin prototypes to key data centers right now. They are locking in their dominance for late 2026.
Because NVIDIA isn't just selling the silicon. They own the software language that developers use to write the AI in the first place. Their moat is infinitely deep.
And that infrastructure battle connects directly to you, the listener.
And everything ties back.
It does. The intelligence of your WhatsApp chatbot translating a menu in real time, the battery management software keeping your Samsung phone alive until 2032, the AI safety protocols that hopefully prevent a power bank from going into thermal runaway.
Yep.
Every single one of these relies entirely on whether Cerebras or NVIDIA wins this specific silicon race.
We have covered massive ground today.
We really have.
We started with the very real physical dangers sitting in our pockets, unpacking the physics of the Casely power bank recall.
Check those serial numbers.
Absolutely. Get them out of your house. We explored the shifting timeline of consumer hardware, looking at Samsung's push to keep your phone relevant for 6 years, while Huawei physically reshapes the standard display to fix how we consume media.
The wide format revolution.
Yep. Then we moved into the software ecosystem, breaking down the EU's antitrust strike against Meta to keep the vital communication gates open.
No API tolls allowed.
Exactly. And finally, we dove deep into the server farms, examining the staggering engineering behind Cerebras's wafer-scale computing and NVIDIA's quadrillion calculation per second Vera Rubin chips.
It is a perfect encapsulation of an industry pushing every conceivable boundary simultaneously.
It really is.
But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, and it ties this entire journey together.
Okay, let's hear it.
If Samsung is guaranteeing that the mid-range phone processor in your pocket will last 6 years, meaning the hardware you use in 2032 is the exact same chip you bought in 2026.
Right.
But the back-end AI server hardware, like NVIDIA's Vera Rubin, is compounding its computational power by over 200% every single year.
Yeah.
What happens to the phone itself? Will our physical smartphones eventually become nothing more than dumb glass windows?
Wow. Are we looking at a future where the device in your hand does absolutely zero local processing?
Just a portal.
Functioning only as a high-speed battery-powered terminal, streaming a hyper-intelligent cloud-based ecosystem. If the server does all the thinking, your phone is really just a monitor.
Exactly.
And well, as long as the battery powering that glass monitor doesn't trigger a thermal runaway event in your pocket, maybe a dumb window is all we're actually going
to
need.
It's definitely something to think about.
It really is. Thank you so much for taking the time to get truly well-informed with us today in this deep dive. Keep exploring and stay curious.